following are the words of Noel DiGirolamo, president of the Suffolk County Police Benevolent Association.
Police officers are already being targeted for assassination. Releasing their personal information to criminals will only further endanger them. Stand with law enforcement. Defend the police.
The following radio show is live, except for the announcement you're hearing right now.
Welcome back to Your Island Live with your host, Tom Shalero, on 103.9 LI News Radio.
And once again, welcome back as we're moving right along now, as promised. And there's not more that I can say about this next guest, who has been such a great help to us in the last year as we have dealt with this pandemic here on Long Island. And my guest is Dr. Rajeev Fernando. You've heard him on the show numerous times. He's been on Jay Oliver also, just helping us out, guiding us through a very, very difficult time. And I'm almost getting the impression right now that maybe there's this great light at the end of the tunnel with all that's taking place. And once again, he's taking time out from, I would say, busy schedule, but it's got to be extremely insane schedule to be with us on our midday show to bring us an update. And it's almost been a year since Dr. Fernando has graced us with his expertise and some of the things that he has done in his life, and also what he's done here for Long Island and the medical professional. So let me say hello to Dr. Rajeev Fernando.
Hi, Don. Thanks for having me on the show. It's an honor to be talking in your show and giving an update for Long Island. Thanks again for having me.
It's a pleasure. I remember when you first came on. I mean, we were hanging on your every word, and it just turned out you were right. You were one of the first to say, you know, this whole idea of masks, it's something to consider. When many medical professionals said it won't have an impact, and that's what got us started. It's hard to believe that was almost a year ago and where we've been.
I know time flies. I can't believe it's been about a year since my first trip to Wuhan to kind of look at things for myself. And yeah, it's about 13 months. Time goes by so quickly.
In addition to that, everybody was anxious to get this over with. And I know you felt that. But at the same time, you knew that this wasn't going to be over by June, which is where a lot of people were saying that. June, July, the summer, it's going to be over with. You had a pretty good read on all of this, of what was taking place. So here we are, a year later. We're approaching 500,000 Americans have succumbed to this. But at the same time, there's cause for hope. And give us that definition of why we should start to feel hopeful, probably for the first time. Doctor?
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. So we've had a significant, and before I even go down this pathway to have this discussion, I really want to emphasize that we can't let our guard down. And having said that, let's get into the conversation. We've had a huge decline in cases. You know, we were at about 300,000 about 2 months ago, and we're down to around 60,000 cases in America. So it's a huge decrease. And I think some of the roles is, yes, like you discussed, a lot more people are taking that responsibly and realizing that how important it is to wear a mask, sacrifice your social life with the distance and less parties, restaurants closed. You know, I know, unfortunately, it hits a lot of small businesses pretty bad, but it's a matter of weighing the risk versus benefits, and the risk is, of course, death. So, I mean, it probably had to be done. And now, you know, a lot of things, even New York is coming out of this with, you know, reopening restaurants at a certain percentage. It was 25%. Now it'll be 50% soon. Stadiums are opening up. So, you know, things are looking much better. The death rates are down. The infection rates are down. People, more and more people are getting vaccinated, which means the initial part where there was a lot of vaccine hesitancy, you know, we've overcome that and things are looking good from that perspective. Yeah, I am going to say there is hope, and America has done great with people. The American people have responded to this really nicely. You can always argue that, you know, vaccines have helped, but I really think it's very early to see those benefits. But I really think the American population has responded to this pandemic very nicely, and we should really be proud.
I can't tell you how long it's been that I wanted you to say exactly the words that you just said when the numbers went from 300,000 to 60,000. You know, we've all waited for that. And today we can start to feel good about that. But here is the problem. Obviously, I don't even know if they realize that. I thought they were thinking that a lot of people wouldn't take the vaccination. Are you seeing that there is, that for the most part, people want the vaccination? They want to be vaccinated?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, when they changed the categories, up until then it was, you know, healthcare workers, nursing home patients. When they changed the recommendation on Sunday, New York State had about 250,000 callers to make, schedule their appointments. A quarter of a million people called to make appointments. That's 10,000 people every hour. So the hesitancy is less. More and more people are believing in the power of the vaccine. And like I said, we read studies which say, you know, 95% protection, but that's moderate disease. If you get the vaccine, you 100%, you are not going to die. Let me reemphasize that. If you get a vaccine, there's a 100% chance that you will survive. Slam dunk, absolutely. Take that point to the bank.
I really hope people are listening to you right now, because I do get a lot of feedback. People come back to me and they say, I'm not doing this vaccination. But obviously so many people are. And the mere fact that you just said that, you know, maybe you may get a little sick or whatever. But if you're not going to die, that's what we need, because of the 500,000 people that we are talking about. You know, as we start to look at this closer, I think the only problem that I could see is getting these vaccines into the arms of the folks that want it, which is turning out to be tens of millions of people. What do you see so far with the vaccination program as we sit here in the later part, the middle part of February?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've come a long way. And, you know, right now we're vaccinating, you know, 1.7 million people a day, which is great. But we are under vaccinating right now. And really, this is tied into the fact the more we vaccinate at a quicker pace, the quicker this pandemic will start to really slow down. So it's inversely proportional, proportional. Less vaccines equals a longer pandemic and a longer time towards normalcy. So that's what we have right now. We really, I think the government has done a good job. We've, you know, pharmacies are going to start giving it out at 40,000 pharmacies across the country. You know, they're doing everything they can, but it really comes down to our vaccine companies really starting to churn up the numbers and their laws, which, you know, talk to these companies and say, hey, in this situation, you really have to turn it up. And I think that's what's going to happen. You know, these big companies are starting to respond, but there is definitely still a shortage. For example, New York, with those 250,000 callers on Sunday, you know, most of the dates I'm looking for right now is they're all booked into mid-March. Some places are booked into mid-April. So we really need to ramp up our vaccines. Granted, we're doing much better, but this is we really, really have to ramp up. And New York in particular, you know, I think this is the kind of thing that's going to ruin the governor's reputation. He was long held for a while as America's governor during this April crisis, but this is definitely going to affect him. He's got to pull it together here.
Is that where we could put the blame? I'm not saying necessarily on government, but on the companies themselves. They just can't produce enough vaccines, those little bottles that we see. They're just not able to do that. Is that where the problem is right now?
Yeah, they're doing the best. And I don't mean to criticize government at all. Like I said, you know, we've gone up significantly to 1.7 million jabs a day. My target would be a little bit higher, at least our goal or aim should be close to 3 million. That's what we should be going for. So I think the aims of and being satisfied and saying, wow, we're doing 1.7 million per day as opposed to, you know, less than a million a few months ago is not appropriate. We have to strive higher, and that's the only way we're going to do this. So the other thing which I'm a little bit concerned is we assumed there'd be four vaccines in the market. We do have Moderna and Pfizer. The Oxford vaccine called AstraZeneca has been a pretty big letdown so far. That's the third vaccine. And I think The U.S. is not going to approve, they're not going to approve this vaccine over here. They're not going to give it the emergency approval to go ahead with this. Now, in South Africa, we know that this vaccine doesn't cover one of the new variant strains like what we have from South Africa. So South Africa is actually giving these vaccines away. They're saying we're not going to use it here. So that's a bad sign. So they've changed the data a couple of times, which really doesn't give confidence, consumer confidence in myself. So let's take that out of the equation. Now, the other big one, which could really help us out, really take care of stuff, is a Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is a single-dose vaccine. And that could really, really decrease the burden on Moderna and Pfizer. Now, that they're waiting for emergency approval as well. And if it isn't approved, that'll be a total game changer. So I'm feverishly waiting to see whether that'll be approved. Game changer for the country.
It's user-friendly. I understand common refrigeration. That's all that's needed. It's not needed to be extreme circumstances in order to keep it viable. Is that correct, Doctor?
You're absolutely right. So the one with the big, cold chain or special refrigeration really comes down to Pfizer. And that's why I think those vaccines won't do well in third world countries, because it's going to be very difficult to maintain over there. So the other one, so even the AstraZeneca, it still has a role, even though it doesn't cover South African strain so badly. I still think it'll have a role in, I hate to use the term third world or, different poorer countries, let me put it that way. I hate to use the word third world, but poorer countries across Earth where they won't be getting Moderna, they won't be getting Pfizer. So I still think it'll have a role, but I don't think it's going to pass the approval rate in the United States.
This just came through, breaking news. Indoor family entertainment centers, amusement parks will be allowed to reopen soon. Summer camps can also plan to reopen as of now. And that comes right from the governor's office, Governor Cuomo. What do you think about that? Are we ready for this?
I think at this point, with everything going down, infection rate, deaths, the hospitalizations, I think it's reasonable to open, but this is the thing I always like to mention, which is a sliding process, which is when you open cautiously and say, well, we should be in a position to close right back if it's necessary. So we have to be bold and say, all right, these are the numbers, more and more people are getting vaccinated. Even kids, we know they get infected. The thought process is saying, kids get infected, come back home and infect all the adults. It never really panned out. So kids, turns out, are not that infectious. The teenagers tend to be a little bit more infectious. That's why I'm more concerned about college students. But so we have a lot of supportive data. But remember, the problem that threatens us in the immediate future is the proliferation of these variants across the country. So that could definitely spoil the party. We're learning more and more about that every day. But like I said, I always advocate for the slide in and slide out thing, which is open. But, if there's something concerning, we should be able to close back. And that's something which I've seen a lot of governors across the country saying, well, we already opened. We can't do anything right now. We got to keep pressing. And that's not the right approach, I think. Remember, these lockdowns are, temporizing measures. You have to be, like certain countries around the world, like Australia, have had, some of the worst lockdowns. They literally closed down everything for months. For example, they had one person at the Australian Open turn positive. The tennis tournament turned positive a couple of days ago. They shut down the entire city and said, well, we got to do the entire city for 24 hours to do contact tracing. So there are certain countries in the world which are very aggressive and certain not. But like I said, be in a position to open, but be in a position to close if it's necessary.
That's an excellent, excellent point. But it seems like the governor wants to start to see this sense of normalcy. And speaking of normalcy, last night on CNN, Joe Biden, our new president, held a town hall meeting and said it looks like Christmas this year will be, I hate to use the word normal, but he used the word normal, will be close to normal. Is that optimistic, pessimistic, or is he just throwing a date out there?
Well, I think the term normalcy has been changed forever. We are very likely, a lot of people are going to continue to wear masks and things like that. Now, let me put this in perspective. I've traveled extensively in places in Asia, let's say Japan, for example. If you're coughing, it's common courtesy to wear a mask in your subway, wherever you work. And that's just the way you're frowned upon if you're coughing and not having a mask. And this is the kind of culture I think which will seep into the United States and Europe as well, where it's just common courtesy to do that. And people who've seen death in their families, hospitals, things of that, will embrace this culture and say it's probably the safest thing to do by wearing a mask. So the term normalcy has definitely deterred from its normal baseline. If you're asking, and I'm not sure about those numbers, when you say it's normal by Christmas or normal by summer, it really depends on many factors. For me, you know, vaccines are very important, how quickly we can achieve herd immunity. And that really, for me, will tell you when we get to the so-called term normalcy. So I really don't like to put in an exact number, but let's talk about it this way. If we continue to go in this fashion with vaccinations, if Johnson & Johnson gets its emergency approval and everyone starts to get vaccinated by this summer, it's a pretty good chance we'll get herd immunity. And of course, like I mentioned, the variants should not spoil the party. In that case, I don't even think we need to wait till December. As long as Americans continue to be responsible, vaccines, herd immunity, I think, you know, closer probably September or late summer, I don't think it'll be December, because remember, once again, when you get into December, it's respiratory virus season again, and you could have another surge over there.
Oh, just incredible. This is such a, I got a smile ear to ear hearing all of this. What about our schools? We're going to be doing a segment, our last segment of today's show, talking about opening the schools. The president yesterday said K through 8th grade he'd like to see open almost right away. The CDC, I believe, has even recommended that. Is this something that is the right thing to do, I would say, given the set of circumstances that we have right now?
Yeah. Like I mentioned earlier in the program, everything is a risk versus benefit situation. So, you know, with this whole year, it's a washout year, essentially. And this is what happens in countries where there are ongoing wars. Let's say Syria, for example. We've lost the entire generation of kids over there. You know, they haven't gone to school in 7-8 years, and that's a big problem. Obviously, we don't have that similar problem over here, but we have to think that we've lost the whole school year. What are the consequences, you know? You know, kids are, you know, I've spoken to innumerable teachers and they say it's not the same by these Zoom classes and over Wi-Fi because, you know, kids are not suited to that. So, I mean, definitely in-person classes would be the better option to go. Other than that, we discussed earlier that kids just don't transmit to adults well enough. So that's something which is good. The whole concept of saying, well, you go to school, pick up the virus and bring it to the whole family really is not such a great, it never really panned out. So that's one thing I want to mention. And the other thing which I think is really big is all these have, by not going to school, you know, it has severe consequences with mental health. You know, kids are supposed to be at school, outside, playing with friends and living their lives. But this is just, you know, staying at home has really affected these kids from a mental health perspective. So once again, the term that I used earlier, risk versus benefit situation. I think it's a good idea to get kids back to school, but the same concept that I mentioned before, which is slide in and slide out. If you're seeing a problem, you go ahead and close the school. It's not a problem. And individual schools are important. Remember, you know, the president can say something, the CDC can say something, but it's really important for the school itself to be ready. So the school has got to say, well, we hear the president, we hear the CDC, and the school has got to be ready. You should not force the school to say, all right, this is what we have to do when you're not ready. So a meeting perhaps with the administration, with parents, that kind of discussion has to happen. And there's got to be a lot of transparency.
You know, we just have a minute or so left. It's not like this is over with right now, but this is the type of a question you would ask once we get to the end of this long, dark nightmare and see that great light at the end of the tunnel. Is this something folks like you, great doctors like you, medical professionals, when you were training and what you were doing, is this something that they put into your mind that this could happen and this could be part of your career?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you something. ID physicians are always worried when the next pandemic will come. It's a constant worry. And I think, you know, this is something I've cultivated over the years, like, you know, going to all these places, investigating Ebola in Sierra Leone, Zika virus in Brazil. And so we're always concerned about this. So take it to the bank, you know, listen to your ID physicians, not necessarily me, but, you know, they always have the best interest, and we're always looking for different endemics, epidemics, and pandemics all over the world to keep humanity safe.
Again, I can't thank you enough for what you've done on our midday program and informing all the folks out there for what they needed to know about this tough time in our American history. And I'm glad to see that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Doctor, you have a great day. Thanks for coming on today.
It's always a pleasure, Bill. And stay safe, Long Island. Take care now.
Okay, when we get back, we'll be talking to Rich Crist, take up some of the Albany stuff, see what's going on, talk a little bit about the president also. We'll be right back.